This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update from One Bills Drive. A stunning news from the NFL today. Police in Florida have charged Patriots owner Bob Kraft with misdemeanor solicitation of prostitution. The police say they have videotape of him paying for a sex act inside an illegal massage parlor. Police in Jupiter, Florida say the 77-year-old owner of the Patriots has not been arrested. A warrant will be issued. Attorneys will be notified. It comes amid a widespread crackdown on sex trafficking in the area around Palm Beach County, Florida. Police say over 200 arrest warrants have been issued in recent days. More are expected. In a statement, a spokesman for the Patriots owner said they, quote, categorically deny that Mr. Kraft engaged in any illegal activity. They say because it is a judicial matter, they will have no further comment. Combine next week in Indianapolis, and Ohio State quarterback Dwayne Haskins will officially throw, according to ESPN. He previously said he intended to participate in all drills at the combine. Mel Kiper has Haskins listed at number 5 on his big board. He says Haskins is the first quarterback coming off the board this year. He finished 3rd in the Heisman Trophy voting this year. Patriots safety Devin McCourty, who said he might retire if New England won the Super Bowl, they did. But he will be back for a 10th season in New England. He's 31 years old, an 8-time Patriots captain. He's played in 139 career regular season games, starting all of them. He's won 3 Super Bowl titles. Buffalo Sabres last night lost in Tampa Bay by a score of 2-1 in a shootout. Rasmus Dahlin scored his 7th goal of the season for the Sabres. Nikita Kucherov recorded his 100th point of the season for Tampa. Carter Hutton with 39 saves in regulation and overtime. Buffalo's next game tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock. Home in the afternoon at KeyBank Center against the Washington Capitals. The Sabres in Washington tomorrow at 1 p.m. College basketball locally, one game in town. 25th-ranked UB, the Bulls are home against Kent State, the middle game of a 3-game homestand. Buffalo came back to beat Kent State on the road in late January. UB's won 10 of their last 12 meetings with them. Canisius on the road in Monmouth tonight, and Niagara, the Purple Eagles, play at Ryder tonight. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio, talking about the Bills, talking about quarterback leadership, and talking about really the biggest story of the day, the Bob Kraft situation. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, NFL insider for ESPN, co-host of their fantasy football podcast, contributor to ESPN's NFL Live, Field Yates on the line with us. Field, John Murphy and Steve Tasker in Buffalo, thanks for joining us. We appreciate your time today.
No problem, guys. Good to catch up with you.
Hey, we're wrestling to figure out what to say, if anything, about the Bob Kraft situation. What do you know, Field? Can you enlighten us on anything that you may have come across there at ESPN today?
Yeah, nothing more than what has been publicly stated and publicly reported, which is that Robert Kraft has been charged with a misdemeanor for soliciting prostitution. It's part of a larger scandal right now that involves not with Mr. Kraft, but with other people. Human trafficking, obviously a very significant issue and something that it sounds like in South Florida is a point of emphasis right now. But Robert Kraft has subsequently denied any of these allegations. But to this point, it is certainly a developing story that has the entire football world ensnared right now.
You know, Field, the charges are so serious. The issue is so serious. Steve and I have struggled to say much about it. You almost got to, and it's difficult to do, and today, when in the Twitter age, it's difficult to kind of take a step back and let this play out, but that's almost what you're forced to do with an issue like this, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, guys, I understand the rush for the desire for information. You know, it's something that just the way that our world works, right? I mean, we have social media that moves the needle so fast, but in this case, as much as we want clarity on this story, it may be that this is something that develops and percolates over days or weeks or even months. But for right now, we know the allegations or the charges involved. It has been stated that there is video of these allegations, but you know, Bob Kraft has already come out and publicly denied them, which I think when someone does that, you would think or hope that they're doing so because it's truthful. because they do genuinely deny them. If not, this could get hairy in a minute.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about this being an enormous weight and distraction for the New England Patriots, and how this is kind of something worse. But think about, they had Aaron Hernandez and how that all turned out. Chandler Jones. And the strife that was put forth last year between Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and Rob Gronkowski. But really, when you look at the Jerry Richardson incident in Carolina and what he was forced to sell his franchise for that, this dwarfs anything that the Patriots have faced before.
I'd say yes and no. I mean, I think yes, because Robert Kraft is the owner and because he is, the focal point of this organization at the highest level. That being said, Robert Kraft is a hands-off owner. He is not someone that's going to meddle in the football operation. And players do their job. And as we know, the players aren't going to be back in the office now for another month and a half. I mean, the Patriots have been off now for almost 3 weeks, and they will be off for another 6 or so weeks, as we know is customary around the NFL during the off season. So while people like Bill Belichick will probably have to answer for it, or while Robert Kraft himself may have to answer for it, I think for the players, while they do have a relationship and there's going to be an emotional side of it in terms of handling it while simultaneously handling their own football business, I think this is going to be something they'll be able to do so in a relatively reasonable order.
It's a stunning story. We're joined by Field Yates, NFL insider for ESPN. Let's talk some football, Field. And you have talked and written about free agency. We're 2.5-3 weeks away from free agency, and talked about each team's most important, biggest free agent decision. And you had the Bills with John Miller, right? Is something an important issue? They got to figure out what to do with their young guard, John Miller, who becomes a UFA in a couple weeks.
Yeah, and my job was to handle the decision-making based off of each local writer's proposition as to who the most significant free agent was. So in that case, Mike Rodak covers the Bills for us here at ESPN, suggested John Miller. As we know, the Bills free agent list is dwindling by the moment. And I think when you look at John Miller, and the essence of what I wrote is that he may be the Bills' most notable free agent right now, and he, not to say that he is not a fine player, but what I think he is a fine player. I don't view him as a difference-making guard that's going to go out there and command $8 million or $10 million per year on the open market. But when you are Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott and you have been meticulous with your rebuild, although John Miller was drafted by a previous regime, there's probably something to be said for rewarding players that entered the building through the building or by the organization's drafting that have performed capably. And I thought that John was fine for them this past year. I thought that pressed into a pretty significant role, he held his own.
I've said this to Steve a couple times on the show. I don't know where they're going with John Miller. I guess I would have to confess I'd be surprised if they bring him back. But I would not be surprised at all if John Miller finds a nice soft landing spot somewhere in the NFL. His age, his number of games played and starts really in his first tenure here in the league. I think somebody's going to pay John Miller some money and he'll be okay when free agency comes and goes. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he'll be just fine, whether it's the Bills or somewhere else. I think that what I would avoid, though, if you're Buffalo, is where I think you want to be careful. And I don't believe that the Bills are going to be the team that does this. But, when you have a lot of money to spend, it doesn't mean that allows you to spend irresponsibly, right? Just because you can afford to overpay doesn't mean that you should overpay. And I think I'll use an example, and pardon for being long-winded, but, the Browns last year had a ton of cap space. And I am not saying that they did not make some home run moves, because obviously Baker Mayfield looks like the real deal. And there have been some other players they added, Nick Chubb included. They look awesome. But the Browns also paid a lot of money to guys this past off season that I think in a couple of years I might look back and say, wow, that's a big number for that guy. Whether it's a $8 million per year contract for T.J. Carey or $15 million per year for Jarvis Landry. There are some numbers now that just because they had the money, they sort of spent as if, I'll say money wasn't an object. So the point I'm making is that if you're the Bills, just because you might have $88 million in cap space, I don't think you want to use that as justification to overpay on players. I think that as simple and as sort of silly as this may sound, the best way to manage a cap is to not make bad decisions. And you typically know bad decisions the minute they're made.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. It's a real balance that everybody tries to strike. But is it possible in a team, in a league with 32 teams, where there only takes one team to overpay for a guy and you lose him, is it possible to get quality players who will play hard and get value for your money without getting a really truly accepted great player? And we had this stat on this show yesterday. No free agent that changed teams last year was a starter in the Pro Bowl this last season. One high-quality free agent or big-name free agent made the Pro Bowl after switching teams and signing a big contract. What are teams supposed to do? They got to find players somewhere, but if they don't overpay, they don't get anybody.
Well, I guess the Bills would actually be the perfect team then that we can look at, because two off seasons ago, what they did, the safety spot in landing Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde. Poyer's been good for nearly 200 tackles over the past two seasons, and Micah Hyde, I think, is about as versatile a safety as you'll find in the conference. Just terrific players that, you look at their money they were spent, and where I think maybe you find value is this, is you commit to players that aren't necessarily valued at the top tier, but are you willing to make them, I don't want to say middle of the road payments, but like slightly above average payments, which I think is the case for Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer. Maybe both of them got a little bit more money than people would have anticipated, but neither one of those deals, if they had gone awry, like let's say Jordan Poyer hadn't become a really good player, you're paying, I think it was 4 years, maybe $14 million maximum value. Like, that's not going to cripple your cap. So I think the value in free agency is almost always finding players in the second wave and beyond. You know, there's funny money spent in the first day of free agency, and there are some players that have panned out and been tremendous. You know, and you know, Stephon Gilmore leaves Buffalo, and he's become the Patriots. He really was their best player this year. But not every single one of those works out as planned. As a matter of fact, those are more the exceptions than the rules.
If you had one way to approach free agency, and I've seen the Bills, I know they think of it this way. Yes, March 13th is the first day of free agency, and that's when, you know, some big splashes will be made. But I think the Bills, and I think maybe smart teams look at it like, yeah, there's March 13th, but there's also a second wave, and even maybe more a wave of free agency going all the way through June almost, where there are bargains out there, right? Once players get signed, and even after the draft, there's a whole new wave of veteran players who are out there now kind of scrambling in a difficult financial position looking for work, and you can find some talent there. The Bills have done it. Other teams do it too, right?
No question about it, and it's players that fit, right? And whether it's fitting culturally, whether it's fitting in terms of scheme, but you know, I look at some of the best players, I think specifically on the defensive side of the ball for the Bills that you know, were not drafted by the Bills initially, whether it's guys like we mentioned in Poyer and also Micah Hyde, or you know, obviously Lorenzo Alexander played a ton of football before he got to Buffalo, but I think he's been at his best since he got to Buffalo, and great to see him re-sign. I mean, I know that there are some questions about how long he fits defensively going forward, but you know, Jerry Hughes for a couple of years was really a dynamic player for the Bills after being a castaway, right? People thought this guy couldn't play after a couple of years in Indianapolis, but he's been a revelation. Maybe not a massive year this past year, but I thought still pretty solid. So yeah. I think there is value to be had in finding players that fit, and I know that's probably not as glitzy as what sells. You know, they're going to be guys that are going to make a ton of money in the first few couple of days, right? We know that someone like Jadeveon Clowney, or someone like, you know, if he hits the open market, you know, Le'Veon Bell make a lot of money. I just don't know necessarily that's where you get the best value.
Do you think Le'Veon Bell is going to get everything he hoped and dreamed he would when he held out and didn't take the $14.5 million franchise tag with the Steelers? Is he going to realize his dream?
You know something? I would think no. But it takes just one team. And I hate to use just one example, but I often turn to this. If you had told me that there was any chance that Brock Osweiler would have been traded by the Houston Texans, I would have told you zero chance whatsoever. Zero. But it took just one, and it was kind of the perfect circumstance for them, right? Cleveland looking to acquire an extra draft pick, and that was sort of part of their vision at the time. So to me, I think that while Le'Veon Bell probably would not get the contract he currently desires from I would feel comfortable saying three quarters of the league, no question about it right now. Maybe there is one in that last quarter of the league that says, yep, let's do it. Let's crank it up. Let's make it happen. And, you know, I keep pointing to the Jets as a team that I think needs to get better in a hurry and has the resources to really make it happen in short order.
With Field Yates, NFL insider for ESPN. Hey, Field, you mentioned Jadeveon Clowney, and the Texans still have the opportunity to tag him and keep him around. Boy, I guess I'm even surprised that it's gone this far, and I know the money is the issue, but I guess I consider Jadeveon Clowney as like a foundational player for the Houston Texans. Don't they think of him that way in Houston these days?
You know something? I don't know that I would say, well, he certainly can be a foundational player. One thing that I would say with Clowney is this, is that prior to and since he was drafted, there are other players that the Texans can point to as their foundational pieces, right? Mm-hmm. Before him, J.J. Watt is a foundational piece. After him, I think Deshaun Watson, foundational piece. Certainly DeAndre Hopkins, a foundational piece as well. All of those players were acquired before or after Jadeveon Clowney. So I think that if you're Houston, like there are other teams that probably couldn't afford to lose a player that has sort of singular dynamic value to them. I'm trying to know if I have a perfect example. Well, I'd say this. When Oakland traded Khalil Mack, he was kind of the guy.
Right.
When you thought of the Raiders, he was the guy. And so I think for Houston, like the idea of losing Jadeveon Clowney, you have so many pieces in place that are really good. That losing Jadeveon Clowney, I'm not saying that, like, ideally you want to not have Jadeveon Clowney, but it's a different circumstance, I think, compared to other teams where there might be one or two guys who really are representative of that organization are sort of iconic, at least for the moment. So I think that for Clowney, I think, personally, that a franchise tag is coming, but that certainly could change based off of what happens in the next 10 or so days.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Now, one last thing I want to ask you about for me is Kyler Murray has decided he's going to play football and only football. He's an undersized, dynamic athlete. It's a little bit like a running back playing quarterback, but he is kind of intriguing. He's a winner. He seems to throw the football extremely well. And like we see every year in the NFL draft, quarterbacks tend to start moving up the draft board from where they begin at this time of year. And with the combine next week, where do you ultimately see Kyler Murray landing and which teams will be the most interested?
Early is where I see him landing. Early, somewhere in the top eight or so picks is estimation.
Wow. Yeah.
And here's why, guys, is this. Is, you know, the idea of waiting for a quarterback. Let's say that you are one of the teams in the top 15 or so picks, right? And the idea of waiting for, hey, you know what? This is not the year that we want to go shopping for a quarterback. You know, maybe we'll wait until next year. Well, how did we view this year's quarterback class a year ago at this time? Whatever the answer is, you can really, I mean, it's possible that it can change dramatically. And I think that's the case with as much promise as there is in specifically Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama. Like, what if Tua, a year from now, decides that he wants to stay at Alabama for his senior season? I am not counting on it, but who knows? Or what if the tenor changes dramatically on Tua? Remember when Christian Hackenberg was on top of the football world after his freshman year at Penn State? Like, this things change dramatically. There's something to be said for the bird in hand. So if you think Kyler Murray's got a chance, and you're a team that needs a quarterback, this is your chance. And in 17 of the past 18 years in the draft, at least one quarterback has gone in the top three. The lone exception was the year that the Bills started the QB rally with EJ Manuel. But the point is that, you know, lock it in. Every year there's going to be at least one quarterback in the top three. And really wouldn't surprise me if we end up seeing Kyler Murray in the top eight or so picks.
You know, Field, they haven't said it, but if that's the case, the Bills are in pretty good position here at the ninth pick overall, right? Somebody might get desperate and say, we got to make a move here to get the quarterback before Kyler Murray gets away.
No question about it. And the Bills also might be in good shape in that, you know, this is a draft that's heavy on defensive linemen. And not that the Bills haven't seen some promise from some of their guys, but I would say that if you were to stack up the needs this offseason for Buffalo, I mean, it's always good news when there's a lot – defensive line depth for all players. There's not a single team in the NFL that I can think of that couldn't use some more quality. quality defensive linemen. So the Bills and other teams in that top 10 that might be able to move backwards in a trade down are sitting pretty in a pretty good spot.
Pastor, one more field. I know we're going to move along here, but Rob Gronkowski, it's been quiet. The word is it's, a week or two away, his decision. What are you hearing? What's his decision going to mean? Is he coming back or is he stepping aside?
Yeah, I wouldn't get too caught up in timelines on Gronk. You know, certainly the Patriots know that, you know, if Gronk is part of the future in 2019, then, you know, what, you know, that obviously is a boon for them. But I think the Patriots have to approach this offseason with the idea of adding a long-term tight end no matter what. Because even if Gronk returns, guys, you need a long-term tight end here. It's too critical for any offense, and it's a good tight end class that I don't think it – I think the Patriots can afford to be patient, or they're not going to press Gronk into a decision before the start of free agency, because I don't think it changes their free agency outlook all that much. All it does is really, you know, if he retires, he walks away from a lot of money. I don't want to say that, you know, I know for sure which way it is leaning. I think the Patriots view it as we'll let Gronk do what he wants to do on his own terms, but I'm sure they have a much better tenor of the situation, or will have a much better tenor of it by the time we get to March 13th.
Gronk, first ballot Hall of Famer, what do you think?
I know, and I try not to you know, hammer people too much on Hall of Fame voting because I know that it's an arduous process, but I would just say that when you are talking about a player who was the most dominant at his position ever, and he did so for a decade, it would be, to me, a real shame if he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Field, thanks for this.
Thanks,
we kept
Field.
You a long
Appreciate
time.
It.
Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care.
Field Yates, NFL insider for ESPN, contributor to ESPN's NFL Live show, joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline presented by Subway Restaurants, proud to be locally owned and operated. We had a discussion about Gronk. It was last week, Steve, in which I think both of us said we were kind of trying to think through it. It was top of the head, but I don't think either one of us thought he was a lock for first ballot Hall of Fame. And just to let people know that I do hear what you're saying. I read some of the comments about that, our discussion, and heard what people are saying. I thought maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he is a lock, first ballot, first time eligible Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
9-10 years in the league, dominant, as Field just said. I'm not going to say he changed the position, but he certainly was a huge difference maker almost right from the start. And I do agree with this. We talked about it last week. One of the best professional careers of any professional sport of anyone coming from Buffalo.
Yeah, and he dominated. Now, you can say what you want about his statistics or his career. He didn't play for like 14 years. I mean, Tony Gonzalez was a 17-year guy. I think Rob Gronkowski is, what, an 8-year guy? Came out in 10. I think this will be the ninth year, or maybe it was the ninth year. But hasn't even played 10 years yet. And people say, well, gosh, you know, usually these guys play. But he's gotten world-class numbers in a 10 or less than a 10-year career. And when you think about during his career, who's been the best tight end in the league, Rob Gronkowski's the guy. Now, he's lost a season here and there with injuries. He's been banged up, you know, with his elbow and his knee, but and his back of late. But when he plays, he's unstoppable.
He's a force.
He's a force. And I think that goes a long way for the fact that, and plus, you know, there's no small thing about it. He's got multiple Super Bowl rings on his fingers.
Sure.
So I don't think there's any way to keep him out. I think he is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Nine years, just finished his ninth year in the league.
Yeah.
A career, you know, pockmarked by injuries. He's had trouble staying on the field, especially in recent years. But I don't know. We were talking about it last week. I don't know in what context, but we were talking about, is he a first ballot? You know, first time he's eligible Hall of Famer. And I think I said, I don't know.
We were talking
the more
about
I thought about it, and when I read some of the comments, I thought, maybe I'm wrong.
We were talking about it when Julian Edelman, after the MVP of the Super Bowl,
was
in.
Right.
And then we started talking about who else. And, of course, Brady and all that, and Belichick, and all those guys are going to go into the Hall of Fame. But what about Gronk? And the question isn't – it's interesting because you get to these guys. Is it interesting? Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer or not?
Yeah.
I think he is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And then, you know, who knows where he's going to be. It depends on how many guys are in his class, who else is in his finals class, who else are they voting for, and whether any of the writers has a bias against the Patriots or Rob Gronkowski himself. Is he going to cost him a couple of votes or whatever. But you look at the numbers and the guys around him and his career and what he's some of the things he's done, and he's in some pretty elite company. And by elite, I mean Hall of Fame company.
You know, I told you this a couple of weeks ago, right before – I think it was right before the Hall of Fame vote. We were down in Atlanta. It blew me away when you saw the list of 15 finalists. We had a couple of them, right? Tony Boselli and
Isaac Bruce.
Isaac Bruce on the show in Atlanta. And somebody came out with a stat that said of the 15 finalists every year, 86, 88% of them eventually go to the Hall of Fame. So when you talk about, oh, is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I would not want to get too deep into creating that special category. Well, he's a real Hall of Famer because he went in his first year eligible. So to your point, Gronk is a Hall of Famer, first year or not. It's certain he'll be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
I agree. Yeah, good for him too. We've had to suffer through his.
Yeah, we've seen it.
We've seen his Hall of Fame production. We've seen it, and it's. I mean, you can think back. The guy's made some phenomenal catches.
Yeah.
Certainly, he's been on a phenomenal team for a phenomenal franchise, playing for the GOAT quarterback, and he's going to get more opportunities because of that. But man, oh man, he's come through.
Quarterback, what type of leader do you want in your quarterback? We have more time to talk about that, and we'll do that when we return. Give us a call if you'd like to participate, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We've got NFL True or False coming up. Next week, we've got Combine coverage coming up next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Steve and I will be at the Indianapolis Convention Center in the giant-sized convention hall there and have Combine coverage, Scouting Combine, next Wednesday, February 27th, Thursday, February 28th. Friday, March 1st, the whole NFL will be there. We will be there as well. Steve Tasker and yours truly. One Bills Live at the Combine next week. More coming up in a moment. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, coming to you on a Friday afternoon with no-show Monday, hockey instigators, trade deadline day. You mark that down on your calendar, like you.
I did not.
Me neither.
I did not.
I cannot. I know. I mean, I used to work at the local media, and NHL trade deadline day was an event, and there were some trades. But boy, in recent years, I don't know. I can't think of anything that made me compelled to follow what's going on Monday. The instigators will be doing it, and we'll be out on Monday. I don't know. No. You're a hockey guy.
I'm a hockey guy.
And you're not even going to follow trade deadline day.
I'm a hockey fan.
Yeah.
And yes, no, I'm not going to follow trade deadline day. I'm going to tune in to the instigators and let them do it for me.
Let them do the heavy lifting.
That's exactly right. Are we going to do true and false today? Because we skipped it yesterday.
Sure. Once you get it going.
It's kind of my thing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You love this. Go ahead. Make sure you.
NFL True False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese.
Boom!
Number one, Allen to Foster. 75-yard touchdown against the Jaguars is the Bills' top play of the year. You can go on. You can. Look at the end of the top 10 plays of the Buffalo Bills throughout the season. Allen to Foster, 75-yard touchdown against the Jaguars. That's the top play of the year. Now, there's other things like Deion Dawkins catching the touchdown of the Jets. There's Kyle Williams catching the little swing pass, the last play of his career. The hurdling, Josh Allen hurdling the guy in Minnesota. There's some big plays in there.
Sure.
What do you think?
What do I think? I think Deion Dawkins' touchdown against the Jets, with Matt Barkley at quarterback, with the fast start to the game, the quick pass to Robert Foster that got things going that day, and then the touchdown by Shady and the second play from scrimmage, that was a special day, and it was only the Jets. But it was a good win when the Bills really needed it, and they were down to their, fourth string quarterback. And to be down there near the goal line and to have a tackle-eligible play to Deion Dawkins, that was the play of the year. I was delighted with that play, delighted with the whole afternoon. And you could argue, I mean, can you have a dramatic turnaround in a six-win season? Probably not. But who could argue that that game and that play, which was a big part of that game, put the Bills on the right track? Now, Josh came back the next week, but Matt Barkley, I think, gave everybody hope, and the offense in particular. My vote would be for the touchdown pass to Deion Dawkins for the Bills' play of the year. So I'm going false with – I love the Jaguars' touchdown play, Robert Foster, 75 yards from Josh Allen, but I'm going with the Deion Dawkins play as my Bills' play of the 2018 season. This is what, something on NFL Network or something, right?
I'm not sure which Twitter site it's on, but that's where it was.
NFL.com.
And you know what? I got to tell you, I'm totally with you. And it's not just an argument. I think it's a statement of fact. That Jet game was the turnaround. Matt Barkley was the second guy the Bills were forced to start after just being on the roster for 2 weeks.
Week and a half.
And you can go back, and Brandon Bean admitted this. He goes, and I don't know if it's a big – but one of the biggest mistakes he's made in his short tenure here was not bringing one of these veteran guys in sooner than he did. But they did bring him in finally. Matt Barkley turned things around, and his win set the Bills up to go the rest of the way and bring Josh Allen back, and it turned the entire attitude of the team around. So, yeah, that I like that touchdown pass to Deion Dawkins. I thought it was a good play, and I will go along with you on that, so I'll say false.
We're both saying false. I think it was NFL.com that set up the plays of the year for each team in the NFL,
right,
and they had ranked third, and this is a big play. And one of the memorable plays of the year, certainly one of the memorable plays of Josh Allen's early career, his hurdle over the linebacker bar at Minnesota. The Bills got off to a great start in that game at Minnesota. They needed something to go right for them, right, if they started off the season with horrible right. losses. And Josh ran for a touchdown early and then came up with an amazing play to jump right over the linebacker on another scoring drive in the first half. People will remember this, right? There are T-shirts, there are statues about that play. It was just a great afternoon in Minnesota. There weren't a six again. Here we are again, Steve. Happiest 6-win team in the NFL.
I know,
but there were some memorable moments. That was third on NFL.com's list of it. Second was the Deion Dawkins touchdown pass, and third was Josh Allen to Robert Foster 75 yards.
All right.
So there you go.
That's NFL true,
true
false number one. Number two.
Oh, okay. We're still
going. Yeah, we got one more. Two more. Number two. Raiders are the NFL's draft's most fascinating team.
Now, why would that be?
Yeah, I don't even get
they
why
got
that
picks.
Is.
They I know got they got
tons
picks.
Of picks. And one of the reasons is they tore it down. I mean, they're trying to rebound. They are at rock bottom. They traded away two of their best players, an Amari Cooper and a Khalil Mack, and then complained that they didn't have any receivers or a pass rusher. And noted how hard those people were to find after they traded the best couple of the best ones away. Yeah, I think the Raiders, and I don't even know where they're going to play, let alone
they're trying to figure that
what
out.
They're going to who they're going to draft. So I would say yeah, because I do have some draft picks, and it's going to be interesting to see what their philosophy is trying to rebuild what they tore down.
I would say false. I don't think they're fascinating. I don't think they're.
They're who I want to see on Hard Knocks, though.
Maybe. I don't know. You know it's going to be a show out there either way. You know, I just started a book last night, Steve, Michael Lombardi's book, Gridiron Genius. And the early part of the book, and we'll have him on the show, too, maybe sooner or later in the next week or two. But he's talking about coaching and what constitutes a genius. Your boy Marv is in that group as well. But talking about Gruden and how Gruden – he worked with Gruden in Oakland, and he said Gruden is tough. Now, you know he's an offensive guru, right? We know that about John Gruden. But he said he doesn't, like, focus on stuff. He would criticize players when it didn't do any good to criticize them. He just sort of floats around, and is he's funny. Gruden is. You can see that on TV.
Sure.
He's glib. But he said he lacks, like, focus. And with that in mind, I don't know. Will they get the draft right? I don't know. They're having from NFL Network is now in charge of their
Mike Mayock,
yeah. So he's never done that before. He certainly can stand at a podium at the combine and let you know what he thinks of players. Yeah. I don't know that they're going to be the draft's most fascinating team. I'm going to say false on this. I'm sorry.
You say true, I say
picks.
False. All right, that's NFL True False.
That's
brought
it.
To you by Yancey's
Fantasy.
We got time
for one more.
No, we don't. We're going to take a break. All right, we're going to keep going then. Last one. Because he keeps
– you got your own agenda.
Somebody keeps talking to me in my ear.
That would be your producer.
Okay. Jaguar – NFL True False number three before I give the plug to Yancey's Fantasy. Jaguars should move on from Marcell Dareus. This was kind of a delicious little note for me.
What's that?
Now people are – Marcell Dareus should move on to the team that got him from the Buffalo Bills. I would say yes. If you're bringing that up, a guy making that kind of money, if he's not living up to the contract, you need to get rid of it. The Bills did it. The Jaguars could be next. If they've got a dominant defense, if he's not a big enough part of it, and if they can save enough money on their cap to help them elsewhere, and because, believe me, the Jaguars are in cap jail, yeah, I think you got to move on from him. I say it's true.
This pains me because I have a great deal of affection for Marcell Dareus. I really do, probably more than I should. He's just another player, right?
That's a lot like you feel about me.
He's just another player. No, I do. I really like Marcell Dareus. I loved seeing him here when the Jaguars came in November. Sat on the Bills bench in his suit. He didn't play that game, right? He was banged up. Sat on the Bills bench pregame in his suit. Hugs all around. But you know what? You're right. They probably should move on. And to me, it's a signal that the window is closing for Marcell Dareus. His ability to make an impact and be a difference maker in the NFL is probably behind him now at a relatively young age. He's always been younger than his draft age, right? Younger than you would think based on the draft. But I hate saying this about the guy because I like him, but it's wasted potential, wasted talent for Marcell Dareus. It was here. He had some great moments here, and he's had some good moments in Jacksonville, but never quite get to how good he could be for a variety of reasons, all of his own making. I'll say true. They should move on. He'll probably bounce around a little bit around the league before he's finally done. I hope he's made enough money and done well with it so that he doesn't have to worry about finances in the future. He's had well chronicled. We all know what he went through personally, right? And some of the tragedies in his life. And that's why I have affection for Marcell Dareus. But it hurts me to say true.
Yeah,
how's that? I sound like a whiner here.
Well, a little bit, but that's all right. These guys are human beings.
He is a human being, right? Who I got to know a little bit.
And you think about it, Malik Jackson and Marcell Dareus. Now, Malik Jackson, he backslid in 2018. He didn't justify his $13.5 million salary. This is the other guy, not Marcell. Then his sack numbers decreased by half, and his decline was emblematic of the problems that plagued the Jaguars, who were in the 2017 AFC Championship game. They went 5-11 last year. Now, he and Marcell Dareus, that's Malik Jackson and Marcell Dareus, together account for $25.5 million against the cap in 2019. One of them has to go, whether it's Malik Jackson or Marcell Dareus. And it'll be interesting to see which one they pick, if not both.
Our Twitter topic today, what type of leadership – oh, I'm sorry. You want to wrap up Yancey's Fancy?
That was NFL True False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese.
Perfect.
Thank you.
What type of leader do you want in your quarterback? We've talked about it all day long. We've taken a couple of calls on it, got some tweets on it. We got one from a Buffalo fan who tweets in, I like Tom Brady's positive affirmation style of leadership when teammates do well. Josh Allen seems to have that same leadership style. Now, if he could just read defenses like Tom Brady and have that touch on short to mid-range passes, Bills win. No one likes to be criticized publicly. He's not going to be Tom Brady, Josh Allen. But I mentioned this to Steve earlier and asked him about Brady as a leader. I do think there's positive affirmation there. I think, we always talk about, when we talk about quarterbacks, we get back to Buffalo's quarterback. And I've praised his competitive fire since he showed up here on the scene. And I think his Josh Allen's positive, and this tweeter calls it positive affirmation style, I think that's true. You know, he becomes a cheerleader. He becomes a guy who runs down on the field when somebody makes a big defensive play or, you know, cheering on the sidelines. I like that. That's leadership too, right? Being the positive guy in the sidelines, not talking negatively about what you could have done better, what went on wrong.
Well, let's face it.
And to the guy, to Buffalo fans' point, not criticizing publicly as much as you may want to.
As much as they deserve it, if they do.
As much as they deserve it. You can't. You just can't.
It's about being the right kind of guy. And then being that guy in every situation. You want a guy who's a great friend, a great teammate, a guy you love and respect personally as well as professionally, a guy who works hard, a guy who's really gifted and smart and all of that stuff, and then spreading it around the team. I mean, that's what the kind of guy you want, and that's certainly what Josh Allen seems to be. We'll have to wait and see if he continues to develop and gets to the point where he can carry a team on his back with the help of his teammates. And right now he's kind of trying to do it all himself. And, you know, as we all know, for good reason on his side of the ball.
By the way, it's a really hard job.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a really hard job to play the position, to play it effectively, and then to be the leader with all the attributes that us and you and your tweets and calls that you've talked about. It takes a special person to be a good NFL quarterback, and a special person, not just a great arm, not just mobility, not just accuracy. There are personal qualities that we've talked about all day here, the last 3 hours, that are hard to come by. That's why it's really hard to find the right guy.
It is, because it is so hard. You have to not only physically qualify, you got to mentally qualify, and then we're talking about all this stuff that's intangible, this leadership stuff. That's all thrown in the mix as well. Plus, you got to be intelligent enough to learn on the fly, learn know football. The vetting process for an NFL quarterback is unlike any other. I mean, it's unbelievable.
All right, a break here. We're coming back with more One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Okay, so what have we learned from today's show? It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater. The preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Rich Gannon on the show today, 17 years in the NFL, four-time Pro Bowler, quarterback, right? Rich Gannon, we asked him about his observations of Josh Allen's rookie year with the Buffalo Bills.
I think he has a lot of the intangibles that you really like at that position. I think he's got some toughness. I think he's got some aggressiveness to him. I think he's a smart player. I think he can make plays outside the pocket with his legs. Clearly, I think he gained a lot of experience in year one. I think he gained the trust and the respect and the confidence, really, of his teammates and the coaching staff. I think we just look back at his body of work. He's got to get better, I think, trusting his feet, being a little bit more quieter in the pocket, going through the progressions and the reads and not being so quick to pull it down at times because he knows he can run with the football. But I think completion percentage is something that has to improve significantly. I think the decision-making, especially in third down and those type of situations.
Rich Gannon talking about Josh Allen. Also on the show today, a little bit ago, we had Field Yates, ESPN's national insider. We asked him about the chance that Rob Gronkowski might be finished, might retire in the next couple of weeks. Here's what he said.
I wouldn't get too caught up in timelines on Gronk. Certainly the Patriots know that if Gronk is part of the future in 2019, then that obviously is a boon for them. But I think the Patriots have to approach this offseason with the idea of adding a long-term tight end no matter what. Because even if Gronk returns, guys, you need a long-term tight end here. It's too critical for any offense, and it's a good tight end class. I think the Patriots can afford to be patient, or they're not going to press Gronk into a decision before the start of free agency, because I don't think it changes their free agency outlook all that much.
There you go, Field Yates. News of the day was the word on Bob Kraft, a Patriots owner, charged with misdemeanor solicitation of prostitution. The word in Florida is it'll be Monday before they actually file the charges and arrest him. He's not been arrested yet. Kraft categorically denies that he was engaged in illegal activity. So let that play out over the weekend. Steve, no show Monday. It'll be hockey with the NHL trade deadline. Tuesday you're off, and Wednesday we're at the Combine. Looking forward to it.
Driving to the Combine Tuesday night.
Yeah, be good. Thank you, Steve. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, Murph.
I want to thank you for tuning in. Thanks to our production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Colton, Nick Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. We'll see you on Tuesday. Chris Bryan and I will be doing the show Tuesday at noon, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.